This is a teaching hospital. And our young apprentice, young Nick, the teenage yak farmer, is going to bring it on home. Go ahead,
That's
man.
That's right. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit.
Come on, Nick. Lick your own radio.
To keep a sin flood of statism out of your head.
Yeah. Like you like being on radio. There you go.
Yeah.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Nick and James,
can
you feel it?
I can.
You feel it, James?
Oh, I can feel it deep in my fiend bone.
Cool. You know, there was a comment on the fiend site today. Do you guys ever read the comments on the fiend site?
Sometimes.
There's a fiend site. Cool.
Freedomfiends.com.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Freedom,
Foxtrot Echo Echo November Sierra.com. So, yeah, somebody, I don't know, posted a really adamant, like Latin lesson or Greek lesson saying that Nick mispronounced coeruleus. It should be coeruleus. After Nick had been saying coeruleus, and I corrected him. Now, I'm basing it on how the chick that used to play Blossom pronounces it on the Big Bang Theory TV show. So she looks like a scientist. She plays one on TV. I figure she's right. But most scientists, the scientists of YouTube generally say coeruleus. I looked at some other, like, you know, lessons, like people film their teacher and stuff. So I think it's coeruleus.
Wikipedia says coeruleus. But, you know, who knows if that's right or not.
It's just a bunch of scientists editing that thing.
Yeah.
So, do we have Brett on site yet?
I guess that's no.
Was that his yes? It sounded like...
There's a yak loose. I think a yak escaped.
On the wires. Yak's chewing on the wires. So, I got a couple announcements. One is there is a fundraiser for Kendall and Christy Croker. Kendall Croker is a neighbor of mine nearby, not too far away, but, you know, a couple miles away, but we know him. Lost his house in a fire here in Wyoming this week. And this is a little fundraiser to raise some money to get them, you know, tide them over until they get until the insurance company deals with them. So they lost their home. Wife, kid, you know, two little kids, husband, wife. The guy is a politician, but he's a Wyoming state rep. You know, I think they make $300 a year or something for that. But he's extraordinarily pro-gun. So for a politician, you know, we don't usually do anything for politicians. So just consider him my neighbor. I linked this on the Freedom Fiends Twitter. If you go there, it says help a good guy who lost his house this week from fire. GoFundMe.com/Croker, KROKER. And they've actually raised $6,400 of their $5,000 goal. But
nice.
You know, if you lost your house, I think you could spend that on hotels in a week. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a drop in the bucket. You
know? Yeah. So help out the Crokers. And so I had a friend die recently, a couple weeks ago. I just found out today, because it's someone I haven't been in touch with for a while, although he called me a couple years ago and left a message, and I called him back and he never called me. It's this guy named Franklin Moline, who played on one tour in my band Bomb. That song that plays at the beginning of the show, we wrote that in his basement. I remember writing that in his basement with him on guitar. And he was also very important in the DC punk rock scene. He played in the band Iron Cross, and then went straight, as they say. He went on and went to Amherst, and then went to law school and became an intellectual property attorney. It's kind of weird, though. It's, you know, I used to keep a list called the Dean's List on one of my websites. I don't keep it anymore, but it was a list of people I died, and by 15 years ago, it had like 70 people on it, but they'd all died of, you know, with the exception of like a few people who died of, you know, like my daughter who died of cancer, which is really weird for someone that age to die of cancer. But, most of them died of unnatural causes, you know, like AIDS, alcohol, car wrecks, heroin overdoses, suicide. And, you know, when they give gun stats, they throw the suicide stats in there too. Really, if you took away the like inner city gangsters shooting each other, and you took away the suicides from old people who, you know, can't get a shot of something decent from their doctor to end their life when they have cancer, the gun stats would be a lot lower. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, for sure.
I imagine it, but I have no real knowledge of those statistics. So
yeah. Well, I saw some stats recently that black men are 6 times as likely to be shot with a gun than they are to kill themselves with a gun. And with white men, it's the opposite. White men are 6 times as likely to shoot themselves in suicide than they are to be murdered with a gun. And then Hispanics, it's more for both. Like, they're 6 times as likely to kill themselves and 6 times as likely to be killed with a gun.
Wow. Well, I think if we took the police out of that equation, what would it look like? I think it would all normalize.
A lot lower. Yeah. Yeah. So take out the police, legalize suicide, have the suicide pills like in Walmart, like next to the flour and sugar, but hopefully in a different aisle or clearly
suicide booths like on Futurama, coin operated.
I love that.
Yeah.
And people from the past think they're phone booths. So yeah, it said, you know, my buddy died of, his obituary said that he died of at home with loved ones after a long illness, which I was like, what does that mean? I'm trying to call people and figure it out. I found this site of obituary euphemisms decoded, and it means cancer, apparently. So generally means cancer when they say after a long illness. So do you guys want to read some of these?
Why do they need euphemisms in an obituary? I don't even understand why it's a thing.
I read an article.
You want to make it sound nice.
Is that Brett?
Yeah, I've been here.
Brett. Brett, you don't sound nice. You sound like you're over a bullhorn. Why don't you hang out till the break, and we'll see if we can get it fixed.
Oh, man. Okay.
Man. And that's not over Fiend Phone. That's over Skype, people. So now you know the difference.
What's going on there?
All right, so let's see. When they say in an obituary, he never married, it means he was gay. What does he was good company mean, Nick?
He was good. I have it up. It's at the top.
Oh. Yeah. Means he was an alcoholic. A truly great man means he was fat. Does anyone else have this up?
Yeah, I've got it
up now.
Okay. You're going to have to do some massaging on what they had for
he was a colorful character. That means he was complete and utter, we'll say, big jerk.
Big jerk. And he didn't suffer fools gladly means the same thing. See, I saw this article recently about some family that was trying to buck the trend of euphemisms. Their daughter died of a heroin overdose, and they wrote an obituary that said, died of a heroin overdose. And it's like, you know, I mean, I can see not putting things like that, and I can even see not putting, like, you know, died of lung cancer, because everyone, you know, people kind of think you brought it on yourself, and you probably did, but
I think anything but autoerotic asphyxiation is fine to mention. I think, like, however I die, you can put it in as long as it's not that, okay?
What would be the euphemism for that? He enjoyed solitary athletic activities. Okay, good. I made a funny and brought us back from that lull. All right, let's see. He died suddenly, means he committed suicide. He had robust views about the Middle East. He was a deranged anti-Semite. Let's see. Robust means fat. Jovial means really fat. Always a favorite to play Father Christmas. Morbidly obese. Endearingly eccentric means absolutely wacko. He was committed to his charity work. What does that mean, Nick?
I don't know where I'm trying to find all of these.
James.
He was committed to avoiding as much income tax as possible.
Good.
Yeah, I like the sound of that one. But you know what? Please put that in my obituary, that I was committed to avoiding as much income tax as possible. Forget the charity work. Yeah. I'm just trying not to pay taxes. I like the next one. He was married to Liza Minnelli equals he was gay.
How many people has she been married, like 7 times to gay men?
I don't know.
He was a tireless and dedicated worker means he hated his family. He never left the office. He became reclusive. He became even more wacko and began collecting milk bottles and giving them names. What does suffered from depression mean?
On drugs.
A long illness.
Cancer.
Short illness.
Heart attack.
Highly respected comedian.
It says he wasn't very funny, but he was very old when he pegged it.
I think this is from a comedian's board.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a couple of references. Okay, Woodbines are, I had to look this up, Woodbines are British non-filtered cigarettes that are supposed to be like the highest tar and nicotine content in the world. All right, he died after a long battle with cancer. Means...
after doing 80 Woodbines a day for 60 years. That's probably like Paul Malls or Lucky Strikes or something like that.
Well, I smoked 80 Marlboros on average for 30 years. So half that. Let's see. He leaves behind 15 children from his 5 marriages. He was a complete and utter jerk and an inveterate horn dog to boot. And he is survived by his wife of 30 years, Mary, who's likely whooping it up now like nobody's business.
That's pretty good.
No, Mary's been left crippled with debt owing to his gambling addiction. He was an activist in local affairs, meaning he was a nosy MF. A strong-willed woman. She was butch. Let's see. The Lord, this is the great, the Lord took him in his sleep. James, what does that mean?
The junkie OD.
He was a noted humorist. What does that mean, James?
An unfunny comedian.
Yeah, she was a famed soprano known for her portrayal of Ada. She was so fat, spear carriers had to surround her and nudge her about the stage like tugboats around an aircraft carrier. Well, you know, the fat lady has sung, the fat lady of Lindbergh, to name an Eno song, has sung for my good friend and former bandmate that I toured with, Franklin Moline. And he would have liked that, except, you know, we would have had to tell a dead lawyer joke, and I don't have any, so we're almost out.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
And I don't mean to even say bad stuff on us. I mean the little demons that get in the wires.
Those are gremlins. That's actual gremlins.
Thank you. I forgot. I'm old. So what's your topic, guys? You got about 20 of them here. We're trying to experiment here. We got Brett on telephone. Is it Skype or it's Skype? Yeah. Say hi, Brett.
Hi. There's a phone booth down the street. I can go there if this doesn't work.
Are you serious? My answer to that is there are phone booths. Be careful, it's not a suicide booth. They might have replaced them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's good advice.
Yeah.
Because it is getting to be the future.
It is. And I don't really, we tried a whole bunch of different things. And here's a tip for anybody doing live shows and, you know, want a guest to sound at least as good as a guest on the Tom Woods show, which is what Brett's sounding like now. So his router was messed up, so we had him switch to his phone, his iPhone, and just call in on Skype, and it was still dropping out, which means it was his internet connection. So we had him switch over to 4G or 3G or 1G or whatever they have there in New Hampshire, and it's solid. I mean, it sounds like he's talking, you know, through a string at the bottom of a pond, but it's solid. So Brett, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I was really excited about the possibility of like a school spectacular tonight since Jim put together so many school topics.
Well, you actually know stuff about this topic. So
Yeah, because you do the School Sucks podcast. But James, why don't you pick one and pitch it, and we'll start talking about
it. Well, you know, I thought something good to maybe get stuff started was this topic about Zuckerberg, the Facebook billionaire. He gave $100 million to the Newark government school system. And like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to save them. You know, and they always say, oh, you know, if they just had more money. We hear that all the time, right? So Zuckerberg says, well, I have more money. Here's $100 million. What can you do with it? And, you know, and of course, I knew immediately, like, oh, you know, boy, just think of all the, like, child-sized handcuffs they can buy with that. Like, I mean, that's going to be awful. Like, that's going to do nothing for kids positive, but, you know, and it might actually just hurt more children, was my prediction. But anyway, so somebody wrote this article in the Wall Street Journal, and they said, what happened with the $100 million that Newark School got from Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg? And the answer was not much, in the short answer, in a book that was released recently called The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools? So anyway, Brett, are you surprised at that result? What do you think?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, more generally, because it is hard, I guess, to follow where the money went, what they tried to use it for. I couldn't see the whole Wall Street Journal article because I'm not a subscriber. And then I tried
that's
to track
probably
the
part
information
of what
down.
Who would pay for. Who would pay for track paywall newspaper. His money probably went to pay for. That's who the only people to pay for paywalls anymore is schools and libraries. Did you guys know that?
Well, you know what's funny is that the first time I read that article, it wasn't behind the paywall, and then I went to read it again, and it was. And I just Googled the article topic, and it came up again, not behind a paywall. So anyway, if you Google Zuckerberg's $100 million lesson, you'll pull it up. But basically, this, according to this, and this article kind of goes into some other examples. This wasn't the first time that a philanthropist had attempted to help these terrible government schools with some big money. The Ford Foundation, they learned a lesson. But basically what they do is when they give this money and it goes to like teacher salaries and administrators, like they're giving it to the people that caused the problem. Okay, so the conclusion of this article is that philanthropists will not be able to change education and improve student outcomes unless they can circumvent the bureaucracies and interest groups that are responsible for the problems they hope to solve.
Can you imagine how much education you could buy if you just built like little rooms with internet access and hired like grad students, you know, at 10 or 15 bucks an hour to kind of moderate kids who wanted to show up using Khan Academy, you know, like online free educational stuff? Because a lot of times too, like what they end up spending money on in situations like that is to teach, you know, the people that are, you said, the people that are causing the problems, but then also like higher tech versions of the same crap that hasn't worked, you know, in 200 years. Like everything should be written on a blackboard. Let's just make it a big computer's touchscreen, you know, and it's still just preaching to kids with using a blackboard, making them show up at the same place at the same time and sit in little rows like you're trying to learn to be factory workers or soldiers. So
yeah, I mean, the answers are so obvious, Michael. What you just said is fantastic, and that would obviously produce a much better result. But
when you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Did your gay cat sound?
Yeah. Hey, we're back. This is the Freedom Fiends. We got cut off there a little bit, but we're talking about Zuckerberg's $100 million lesson. He paid $100 million in donations to the New York City public school system or whatever.
It was Newark in New Jersey.
Yeah. Now, I didn't catch that part. Do you guys really First of all, we're on the radio in Newark, which is pretty cool. Second of all, you guys ever been in Newark? It's really, if you like, if you know what, people in Somalia who don't want government, their friends say, if you don't want government, move to Newark. Seriously, it's you're more likely to be murdered there than most places in America. Put it that way, because there's cops. But it's kind of a lost cause. But we want to explore the idea. I want to pick Brett's brain about my modest proposal for, and this one works whether you want to be an anarchist and fund it completely with, you know, the parents who want their kids to have education, bringing like, you know, cherry pies to pay the teachers or chipping in, or if you want to, you know, tax and steal and pay grad students Bernie Sanders, you know, mythical $15 an hour, which would be nothing compared to, you know, having the infrastructure of schools. You know, there was once a contest. It was called the Green Schools Initiative, and it was an online thing. You could, you know, I think it was like through the press, through the White House or something. And I entered it, and it said write an essay on how to make public schools more green in America. And I said bulldoze them and plant trees, and I did not win. I didn't win. I was really upset. But
I like, you know, the sound of that.
Yeah, that would be the totally the James Babb solution. So I want to explore the idea of, like, you know, my town, like, added a 1 cent sales tax for 2 years basically to build a new library when we have a fine library. There is a fine library already here. Like, first of all, who needs libraries anymore? You know, yeah, you have a library. Brett is talking into a library right now. It's got every book ever written on it. You don't need a libraries are just places for homeless people to go use the bathroom. Why do you need libraries?
In Philly, we've got SEPTA stairwells for that, too. So,
yeah. You know, you could just buy some FEMA structures, you know, just some Quonset huts, give them high speed internet, and pay and put some porta potties out front, and pay grad students to come, you know, starving students $15 an hour to come help kids use Khan Academy online, and then the kids who don't want to learn can go up the street and work at the uranium factory in Wyoming like they should. What do you guys think? Discuss spelling counts.
I think it's a beautiful idea, but I mean, public school has existed in this country now since, you know, the 1860s, and in its current form, really, since maybe the 1920s. And it's become this self-fulfilling prophecy of intellectually self-sufficient people, right? So this idea of setting people free, leaving children to their own devices, It wouldn't happen. I mean, your idea is great, Michael, but the reality is, like, you're the kind of man who would be chased out of a school board meeting with a broom for even broom. Suggesting such a thing.
Even if I brought cherry pie?
Imagine what the teachers' union would say about that strategy.
Oh, exactly.
About what? Pave over them with trees? Yeah.
You know what the teachers' union said about the Khan Academy? You know, when they heard about all the success it was having, they went, Khan!
Well, never I mean, mind. That's undeniable. Never mind. And for people who've used it, I'm kind of wondering what teachers think of it. I'd be surprised if some teachers haven't implemented Khan in their classrooms for certain things.
Oh, they have. They were afraid of it at first, but then Bill Gates put a bunch of money behind it.
Haven't some municipalities tried to outlaw it? Like, or they've, like, literally, like, tried to outlaw free college over the internet and things like that. They're so afraid of this. There's a lot of resistance in some circles.
Well, my only experience, and I think it relates to this, is I was a tutor from 2006 to about 2013. And in the early days of doing that, working with kids on academic subjects, like especially when they had to write papers, and I was always trying to put my ear to the street to kind of figure out what they were being told in schools. This is when I was new to libertarianism, new to Free Talk Live, and it was kind of a social experiment for me to talk to these kids about their school experiences and what they were learning. And one of the subjects that came up a lot because I was helping them write papers was Wikipedia. And Wikipedia was talked about in school like it was a porn site. It was basically forbidden. It was the Wild West, and they were told not to use it.
Well, I remember there was an article written by the editor and publisher of the Encyclopedia Britannica about 6 years ago, basically demonizing Wikipedia in the same way. But, you know, that's just the horse and buggy manufacturers being upset about the car industry.
Well, what does Wikipedia promote? It promotes intellectual self-sufficiency and intellectual self-defense. A smart person can, or a person trying to become smart, can use Wikipedia to that end. If you go to an article,
starting point for anything.
Yeah. First of all, you can get a map of the topic, right? It's usually the first paragraph of the Wikipedia article, and then they give you an outline. You can see how well it's sourced. If there's no cited sources.
I want to know what haggis was, because our co-host Dan Green over there in Scotland talks about it so much. And I went to Wikipedia, and it says, haggis is a savory pudding containing sheep's heart, liver, and lungs minced with onion.
Mm.
And I immediately went, I know enough about it that I'm never going to eat it. And I clicked off the page. And everything on that intro is accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can also see, like, Wikipedia has volunteer editors. And I explain this all to kids, and I even explain this to some teachers. Wikipedia has a staff of volunteer editors. When changes are made, editors have to check those changes. If it's a topic that's incredibly controversial, like, say, the page for Barack Obama, once it's determined that all the information is on the page is accurate, the page is locked. So if you went to the Wikipedia page for the president, let's just say, I guarantee you'll see a little lock at the top of it. Wikipedia is also incredibly instructive for how a topic develops over time. You can go into the history and you can see every time the page has been edited from the time the page was created. So Wikipedia has a kind of accountability that the textbooks that they're giving these kids in the schools and the teachers themselves don't have. And that was maybe one of my more controversial claims, that Wikipedia is more accurate than your textbooks and it's smarter than your teachers, because it is this huge community effort of people who are mostly deeply invested in spreading accurate information the best they can.
I had an entry on there. There was a Michael W. Dean page for 5 years, and then the editors decided I was not noteworthy. So I'm not bitter, and I go with what they said. I am not noteworthy. I was.
I think you're worthy of a note. I think you are worthy of a note.
I have notes on there because, interestingly, there are articles that have stood the test of the fighting, the weenying amongst the editors. For like several movies I've directed and a book I wrote, $30 film school book, it still has an article, I believe still has one, and Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow, and DIY or Die. Now, Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow, that's kind of a good homeschooling movie literary contribution that I've made, and I passed that on to James, and I kept poking him to watch it, and he finally just wrote back and said, yeah, it's pretty good. I thought you were just like, yeah, leave me alone, kid, you bother me.
No, it was good. Yeah. I liked it.
Cool. Yeah, I try to make, you know, before I got into doing Liberty stuff, I did a lot of media production. It was all, you know, kind of educational, like people that were kind of should have been really famous but weren't. You know, I was interested in people that like people that were interesting but didn't like fit into the happiness machine that is America, I guess. And Hubert Selby's definitely one of them.
It was a good, and you did a good job with the documentary. I thought it, because I really came at it from somebody that didn't know anything about the topic. So so it kind of took me through the whole like career arc of him. So I thought that was pretty informative.
Well, you know, there is a formula for documentaries.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of what's that? There's that famous magician has a documentary on Netflix right now. You know who I'm talking about? He was a skeptic. He was like a magician buster.
Oh, Randy.
Yeah,
amazing, Randy.
Yeah,
he's. You know, I have a really good friend that used to live with me named Steve Ziegler, who was Randy's assistant as a teenager. And like traveled with him and stuff, and so I heard about him and heard wild stories about this Randy guy before the internet was around. So Randy's still around, right? He's not dead, is he? He's still offering $1 million for anybody that can prove
that they're psychic,
that they're psychic, or that they can, you know, bend things or move things with their mind. Yeah, I mean, really, that right there, that that's like the kind of debunking. I think he should offer $1 million to anybody who can prove that public schools cause help more than hurt. Although that'd be more objective, but I'd like to see that.
Well, it's the same kind of faith that leads one to believe in psychics and in government schools. So
I know. And, you know, it comes down to the same problem with, like, I've gone up, I went through AA and got sober, and I'm not in AA anymore, but I'm still sober, like, 21 years later. And I still have a soft place in my heart for AA. And when I have friends that really have a problem with drugs or alcohol, you know, and they come to me and say, I want help. I did this recently with a friend. I got a friend, like, from the edge of suicide to, like, going to NA meetings every day and loving it and making friends and getting a sponsor. And, like, you know, he doesn't want to not go to a meeting now. And he's a rational guy who's, you know, kind of agnostic and stuff. But there's a lot of criticism of 12-step ideology among liberty people. And recently, like, Tom Woods interviewed some guy, did a scathing thing on it. And the thing is, it's really hard to deal with or to address statistics, because there are these like peer-reviewed, like, psychologist monitored studies out now recently that basically say AA has a, you know, success rate of like 1% or less, when I know for a fact from experience, you know, from going to many meetings in many cities, it's more like 10 or 20 or 40%. And the reason those studies don't work is because it's anonymous. If someone calls you on the phone and says, I want to interview, you know, have you ever been to AA? I'd be like, I'm not doing the survey. You know, that's what you would get from most people who do it. So it kind of is like built in to not allow itself to be audited, which is kind of weird.
Well, that is interesting, because a non-participant wouldn't skew the numbers, but I do. I wonder how that. I would want to know more information about how that study was done. I mean, the number that I've heard thrown around the most is about 5%. Yeah. And actually the same with, like, really expensive 28-day rehab programs. Yeah. So both around 5%, but I would really be interested.
You're
in
listening
how that
to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. I'm Jim Babb. We're here with Brett the Knot.
Hey.
And the anarcho-yacitalist, Nick.
That's me.
It's great to be with you guys. We're having some interesting sound situations with Brett. We've got him on a tin can tied to a string, which is routed out to a telephone pole, which is connecting to a satellite dish, bouncing the signal off the International Space Station. But we got you.
Yeah, wouldn't that be hilarious if it then routed back into the same router that we're having all the problems with? Oh, the egg on our face. Gosh.
So, we were just talking. I know, Nick and Brett, you guys have a history together, and I thought it was kind of interesting as I was just sort of looking at both of your websites tonight. I listened to a segment from Free Talk Live where Nick called in, and it was you and Ian Freeman were there, and you guys had an interesting conversation. Maybe you could sort of recap that for us.
Yeah, I think Nick can explain what made you call in that night. I'm actually interested to know why, if you remember, it was like a little over a year and a half ago, but what made you pick up the phone and call Free Talk Live that night?
Oh, that's interesting. I was just trying to think of that, too. I had been frustrated with school for quite a long time. I was having school sucks, right? That's just it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to Free Talk Live, I think, that night, and then you were on. I was thinking, you know what? This is my chance to talk to Brett. Like, I'd been listening to School Sucks for a while, And I was like, well, I really got to talk to him because I need somebody to encourage me. Because I think it was kind of subconscious at the same time. It was like I was trying to figure out what I needed to do with my situation. And I thought, well, I should talk to these guys. I know what they're going to say. I know what Ian and Brett are going to say, but I want to hear it. I really want to hear it. So I called in and I talked to you guys. I asked, like, what was your guys' opinion on me getting out of school? And did you think I could do it to raise yaks? And and you guys encouraged me to do it. And that was kind of where I got the first push to get out of school.
That was the first push. Interesting. Well, aside for, you know, the momentum I think you already had in that direction. And it's funny, you know, I listened to that clip because I actually put it in the show notes for the episode we just did together. It's on my website as 378, An Introduction to Self-Directed Learning and Living for Teens with Nick Hazelton. Mm-hmm. And I watched that clip and I was surprised. I was a little bit more ambivalent about it than some people might expect. And I think there was just a little bit of a apprehension about, you know, giving clear advice one way or the other on the issue. And obviously, I think people know the way I would lean to somebody that I don't really know anything about and is 15 years old. And I think as the conversation went on and then we talked more in the future, I started to believe that, yeah, that was definitely the right recommendation for Nick. We've worked together several times since then. I've gotten updates. And this last show that we did together, I said in the intro, this is the kind of episode of School Sucks that I dream about. It was exactly somebody like Nick that I was picturing speaking to when I started the show. So that was a fateful night back in, I think, March of 2014 when he called Free Talk Live. And I'm glad to see the progression.
Wow. So what a success story, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I am now, I dropped out of school. I rose out of school. And I've been doing the self-education thing for, I guess it's been 2 months or about a month out of school, if you don't include the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Rose out of school. I love that.
Yeah.
I think you or somebody on your show came up with that a few months ago. It might have been Derek J.
Good.
I love it.
Good. Well, yeah. At that recent episode you were talking about, I was listening to the Anarcho Yakitalist podcast, and Brett, you said that's also on yours, right?
Yep.
We're going out.
All right. So we'll get back to that after the break, after this trip to the market.
So I'll stick with you guys for one more to wrap that up if you want.
Sure. Yeah, we're keeping you. We know the audio is not the best, but we're going to keep you around for hour two with the Freedom Fiends.
All right, I'll do it. Oh, that was the end of the hour, right?
Rocking out to the outro music for hour one.
Oh, that's right. If I can hear that over my phone.
You can't hear it, but we're rocking out. Everybody in the audience is rocking. Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. This is hour two. We are broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. All right, so we're back. And I'm Jim Babb. I'm here with Nick Hazelton and Brett Vinat. Got you guys with me still? Has a drone taken you out?
Not yet.
No, I pulled my blinds down, so... Oh, wait. Can they still find me?
Infrared, right?
Are you masking your life signs?
Absolutely. I got half a roll of tin foil wrapped around my body right now.
Nice. Nice.
I do two layers.
So, Nick, this is a topic that I thought maybe you could have some feedback on. There was a story about a school principal who was forced to cancel all of his dances. The article says after a majority of students make a provocative demand. Anyway, supposedly these students said, you know what, we're gonna be dancing the way we want to at our dances, and you can't stop us. And the principal just kind of threw up his hands and said, okay, we can't have dances anymore. What do you think about that, Nick?
I think that's super funny because my father was the director at the school that I went to, and he was always the one laying the rules for the dances. I don't think he really ever chaperoned, but yeah, he was the one that was telling us the rules at the beginning of school. And so, yeah, I find it hilarious that the kids are doing this. It seems like something that I would never be interested in putting up a fight over. That's not what I see important. But, you know, I'm not into dancing. But I think it's a great act of civil disobedience.
I think it's great. This is in Maine, by the way, a high school in Maine, Gorham High School. I just like the idea of students saying, you know, heck with you. We're gonna do it and whatever. You know what? What they should do is go have dance parties off of school property on their own, self-organized, and don't invite this principal. That's one possible solution, right?
Or do invite him just to throw it in his face.
Just to grind it in his face. Yeah. Now, you know, granted, you know, I have, you know, young girls, and I could say as a parent, I don't think I would be thrilled to see, you know, some, you know, grinding going on at a school dance. So, you know, I think it is sort of a sketchy area there. Like, I think this is probably a timeless battle, right, between parents and school officials and what the kids want to do, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think kids that age probably want to push limits a little bit. You know, when you get to be a little bit bigger and you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel and this realization that you're going to be in the adult world someday, you want to start behaving in more adult ways, you know? And even though this might seem juvenile, this act, I think it is a kind of rite of passage to push against what adults consider acceptable. And that's an example of this.
Just like the music the kids listen to. Like, it's got to be something that your parents hate. Whatever your parents liked, you know, kids were going to find something that they can enjoy that their parents aren't going to like. And they can look at it, I can't believe you listen to that.
You know? So here was my progression. The Beastie Boys was first. That was late 80s.
Okay. And now, how did your parents feel about that?
Oh, gosh. I remember making my dad play it in the car. And I don't know how he put up with that. What a patient man. We listened to, the entire License to Ill album with me and my friend in the back seat. And my dad must have been horrified. And then
now it's my children that are horrified when they're forced to listen to Beastie Boys. So we've come full circle now.
That's pretty funny. Then it was Guns N' Roses, then it was NWA, and then it was the Grateful Dead.
You really punished your parents there.
Yeah.
You, by the end, they were begging for Beastie Boys. What about you, Nick?
That's interesting. I grew up listening to my mom and dad's music, mostly my dad's, which was the Grateful Dead, actually. and a little bit of Paul Simon. Then I started listening to country music. And my mom doesn't mind country music because she has to work with a lot of people that love it. But my dad hates it. So whenever I'm like driving, and if I had been driving the car beforehand and the country station was still on, he would turn it off immediately. And now I listen to a lot more hip hop and rap, and I've never even dared playing any of it for them. I think I would just get a disapproving look. Like, my dad has a certain look. He'd look at me, and I'd just know, turn it down.
All right.
Mm. Who are your rappers?
Right now, I'm listening to Mad Child. He's a guy out from Vancouver. He's big in the underground scene. And then nice. I always listen to Eminem. And then Hobson is one of my favorites.
Those are that's
probably the top three.
Eminem, that reminds me of another story. Like, being a teenager and getting into arguments with my dad, you know, about the things I wanted to do and the limits that he wanted to impose. I was my parents' oldest child, so they were strictest with me. And I remember saying, you know, when I'm my dad's age, he was probably like 40, early 40s at the time, I'm going to be cool and I'm going to understand kids. I'm going to be the coolest dad. And then it was like 4 years, 5 years later, I started working with kids after college and listening. This is when Eminem first appeared, when I was like maybe 21 or 22. And some of the other rap the kids were listening to. And I was horrified. And I was like, oh no, I'm already not cool. And I'm not even half my dad's age.
You're just precocious. You got uncool at a much faster rate than other kids.
Oh yeah, it seemed that way, because I was the one who had to impose the limits on kids all of a sudden. So that kind of really, you know, decreased the cool factor. I went home feeling not cool from work. So,
and that was that like a wake up call to you?
Yeah, it was like, how am I going to get cool again? And I didn't figure it out until like 2009 when I started this show.
Okay, nice.
I'm like, this
is
cool.
I thought you started racing kids.
Oh, I did. I raced kids. And yeah, that was kind of cool. The kids thought
that
was
cool. Like drag racing? Or
no, for some reason, when I was like 21 to 25, I was incredibly fast. And I can't explain it. But I could jump and run. Yeah, okay. on foot. And so, you know, a lot of the kids at the school were very athletic and they didn't believe that I could beat them in races. So I would race them and the other staff would bet on it. We would race around this big circle driveway. It's probably maybe a quarter of a mile. And I would win. So that, they thought that was pretty cool. I'm trying to think if I did anything else cool, but I really don't feel like I did. I feel like I just became a kind of scared disciplinarian for the early years of my educational career.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'm glad you escaped before it ruined you as a person.
Oh, no kidding. Look how cool I am now.
Yeah.
If I had told the kids about me now, they wouldn't have even believed it. They said, no, Brett, you'll never be that cool.
Did the SWAT team ever show up at your school?
No, this was a private school. I mean, these kids had already had their run-ins with the law, you know, outside of school. This was a boarding school in Vermont. Most of these kids were inner city kids. They had come from like Providence, Rhode Island, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., bad areas. So my school that I worked at from 2000 to 2004 was actually, ironically, you know, with some of the topics we're covering tonight, a kind of refuge from police interactions. Because a lot of them would go home for holidays and they'd run into the cops in their neighborhoods and get in trouble.
Yeah.
But we actually protected the kids from the police. You know, like sometimes kids would run away from the school and they'd like go into the town and we would do like a manhunt or a teen hunt to get them back, like, you know, into a van and bring them back safely before they wound up in a jail, which was like the last thing that they needed. So it was actually, as bad as the school was for many reasons, including like medication and overdiagnosis and disciplinary policies that I didn't agree with, the kids were very safe from police compared to, you know, the zero tolerance environment of the school, the public schools today.
Right. Well, I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, that a school would be a safe haven for a child, you know, where it is a place they would be protected from the roving predators that may surround, you know, or infest the community. You'd think that the school would be a place that they could feel safe. So, that's certainly one of the reasons my kids go to private schools. We go to Quaker schools here in Pennsylvania. And, you know, one of my main concerns is like, there's just no way I could allow my kids to go someplace where the police would be invited in for something. You know, like this, it's just not going to happen. Like, absolutely not. I am not going to put my kids in that kind of environment. And, you know, we see, you know, like the story I mentioned to you earlier, in a Colorado school, a student, this girl came wearing a Halloween costume, which was a gas mask and a trench coat. Okay. So, and you think, oh, that sounds like a pretty cool costume, right?
Yes, well, absolutely.
It triggered a chain of events that resulted in a SWAT team descending on the school, okay, and like locking down everything, and like, we're having this huge panic, and everybody's gonna freak out over a kid's costume. Bizarre. And we're out.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Nick, are we alone on the Freedom Fiends right now?
I think we are. We lost James somehow, but we'll keep on going. This is Talk Radio and the show must go on. And we're talking about the SWAT raid. Was it a SWAT raid in a Colorado school because of this?
Because of a Halloween costume. Yeah. Gosh, this is scary. Losing James. I feel like we need an adult. But I think we can. This can be like one of those movies where the kids are left alone and somehow they make it through. Like Goonies. We're like the Goonies right now.
Yes. Yeah, that's filmed way north of here, but in Oregon.
Oh, really?
Connection. Yeah, Astoria, Oregon. It's a very beautiful place.
Oh, cool. Then, yes, that's then we are the
Where Christopher Columbus, not Christopher Columbus, but Lewis and Clark landed, too. They came up through the Columbia there.
Yep, absolutely. Which was named after Christopher Columbus. So, this story, I was saying during the break that it's kind of like a comical exaggeration of the kind of stories that we've been hearing for pretty much over a decade. I mean, this actually started
Fiend phone.
I was in high school. And that was, I graduated from high school in 1995, so 20 years ago. And I actually found myself caught up in a kind of zero tolerance situation where trapped in the school, the police came in and questioned me and my friends over an incident related to
Fiend
drinking
phone.
Off school
Fiend
grounds.
Phone.
And one of my friends wound up getting arrested, dragged out of the cafeteria by the police. And that was before terms like zero tolerance was even thrown around, we had the drug-free school zone. But obviously in the last 20 years, and really in the last 10, there's been such an acceleration in that where the discipline that used to be done by teachers or administrators is now basically being outsourced to police and criminal courts. Have you, when you, the school you went to, Nick, even though it was a charter school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a zero tolerance policy in place there?
I don't think so. I know that we were not allowed to wear masks. Like the student did in Colorado. That was an explicit rule, and we were not allowed to have weapons or fake weapons. We were not even allowed to have, you know, the switchblade combs because they looked like a weapon, and there was a kid that, that actually threatened somebody with a switchblade comb on the bus. But I don't think it was called zero... Yeah, I don't think anybody... Or that we had any... thing called zero tolerance, and I don't think there is anything there in place now either.
Well, yeah, that's interesting, but the school would only be considered semi-public.
No, I mean, I think charter schools are technically public. They're funded.
Okay.
Public funds, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, unfortunately, without James, I don't have the details of the story.
I'm here. Hear me.
Oh, you are. Oh, yeah. So we were just talking about the SWAT team response to the Halloween costume.
Is he James. Still here? Is he gone again? Oh no!
Oh no. Man! So the plot thickens. This is like the scene in Goonies where I don't know. I want to say something that had something to do with the Josh Brolin brother, but I can't think of how James relates to the Josh Brolin brother in Goonies. We should, anyway.
I can hear some feed from him. There's something going on Jim's end. I don't know what it is.
It's what an exciting night as far as technical challenges are concerned.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to pull up my notes, but we started talking about this because of the show we just did together. And I've been thinking, like, over the course
Fiend
of the
phone.
Last week, so
phone.
Released that show, how can I get that into the ears of more people your age? I felt like we covered so much great material in that show. I felt like it was generally positive. You know, there was a lot of good advice. So, yeah, that was really, really energizing. For me, for the people who are listening who don't know too much about my show, I think what we're always trying to do is make this distinction between school and education. We've told some of these stories tonight where, you know, police come into schools and what else do we cover, Nick, besides the SWAT raid? I felt like we did a story right before that. Oh, the dancing.
How about dances?
Yeah, the dances where, and even what we were talking about before with Michael about just not trusting kids to be left to their own devices for intellectual exploration, like that is not synonymous
and
with education.
We'll have to go back with that. Oh, we're already out. Radio sounds like now. I didn't hear that one. I just
hey guys, can you
fellow sheep? Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12%?
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless free market non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
We're back. Freedom Fiends. All right, we're back. The NSA is trying to mess with us, trying to tamper with our communication lines, but we will not be stopped.
This seems more sophisticated. This seems like aliens. You think the NSA is capable of what we've dealt with tonight?
No, I don't think so. You're right. Definitely could be those hostile aliens. But, anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're discussing the tragedy of government schooling, And where were we when we left off, Brett?
Well, I was just doing a roundup of, you know, trying to familiarize maybe some of the people in the audience with the mission of my project, which is called School Sucks. And, you know, I was saying the distinction that we're continuously trying to make is between schooling and education. And, you know, tonight we've talked a lot about schooling, indoctrination, even a kind of psychological conditioning with all of these crackdowns and zero tolerance policies. And what we were talking about when Michael was on earlier, and he's talking about this free school idea where you just have a Wi-Fi connection and maybe some intelligent and mindful graduate students acting as monitors or facilitators. That's real education because people are set free to basically ride their own intrinsic motivation into, you know, succeeding in the explorations where they want to succeed. So I try to make that distinction. The schools are always helping me make it, you know, since they're so bad at education and so good at conditioning and indoctrination. So I just wanted to...
Do you remember an experiment? I think it was in India, where somebody like took some tablet computers to like an extremely poor village and just gave them to the kids, and just they like didn't even like give them any instruction, but this allowed them to explore them on their own, and they began to immediately start to just teach each other and begin to they just started learning completely independently with that. Does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah, his name was Mitra. I forget what his first name was. But basically what he did, Sugata Mitra, and he set up these kiosks where basically there was just this computer in the wall, like on the side of a street. And kids without any training could go up and just start playing around with it. And it was a huge success. He's given at least a couple of TED Talks. But this was completely self-directed, you know, learner-directed, intrinsically motivated, curiosity-motivated education taking place. It was called, I think, the hole-in-the-wall experiment.
Neat. See, that's why I love having you on this show, Brett, because you know, it's like, I remember, like, wasn't there something, and you know the names, you know the... you're well-informed on these topics. It's great.
Well, you know, I actually pursued him as a guest. It's hard to get serious educational thinkers on a show called School Sucks, but I did maybe send an email or two to Sugata Mitra. And, you know, what he was trying to discover, I felt like it was, you know, he really would have been on board with our message if he just could have seen through the word sucks, because it was really a study to see how much children can teach themselves, you know, even children who had no context for any kind of organized education, you know, that they could make a meaningful experience out of a completely unfamiliar technology really in no time at all. They would go up, they would start tinkering with the tablet or the computer, and, you know, within a matter of minutes sometimes, they would be using it effectively and productively.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen it with my own children to a certain extent where, you know, well, I try to give them, you know, plenty of tools and opportunities for learning. They still will surprise me because they'll find things that I never even thought of. My youngest has, you know, has an interest in languages, and she found, I guess, Duolingo was one of the first things she found, and she showed me how to use it. I guess I don't know where she had heard about it, but maybe through school or maybe through another student. Mm-hmm. But she started using Duolingo, and then we had some like an iPad, one of these like iPad programs where it's like it's free until you want to like for the first couple lessons, and then you can buy more lessons. So, you know, it's a great way to get them started. And so I just, you know, here, try that out. She's like, oh, well, okay, I've done all those lessons. Can I get the other lessons? I'm like, yeah, sure. So we bought the other lesson. She's like, and that was like Spanish. You know, she's like, it can do Japanese. Can we do Japanese? Like, sure. You know, it's like,
yeah.
So, you know, you just sort of, if if I mean, I guess my goal is, as a parent, is just to not crush that, you know, just to not get in the way as often as possible. So
yeah, it really makes that question seem silly, right? The teachers ask and school apologists ask, like, how would the children learn without us? You know, when the truth is, it's like, hey, get out of their way. You know, like, they will definitely do it on their own if they're just I don't want to say set completely free. This came up in my conversation with Nick, and Nick's a good example of somebody doing this, you know, later in his years. And because he's managed to, you know, maintain some of that self-directed spirit and curiosity that these young kids seem to have so naturally. So, yeah, just like really stepping out of their way is so important. But also as a parent, I think there's some monitoring. I said to Nick in our conversation that there's, you know, a certain set of personality traits that are there naturally but are kind of crushed by school that are really helpful when it comes to intrinsically motivated autodidacticism is the word for self-directed learning.
Right.
Yeah, I was talking to, I guess, an unschooling parent just, I think, a couple days ago, and they were telling me that their 10-year-old, or who's 9, had already taught himself to do basic math and to read and write, and he did it almost entirely on his own. He wanted to learn some stories, you know, he liked hearing stories, and the only way to do that and to get more of it was to read, and then he had to do something with math, so the way he had to do that was to learn how to count, right? And kids do this. It's absolutely true.
Now flip that around. What if you're 9 or 10 and you have no interest in math, but you're stuck in a school where they're saying, hey, Billy, you need to be able to divide right now, you know, and you're not acting like math doesn't exist. Why are you such a failure, 8-year-old Billy? What can we do to correct you? What can we do, Billy, for you to get you on the right track to stop failing so much? I mean, that's devastating for a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was like an unschooling facilitator for this boy a couple towns away from me back in 2011 and 2012. And he was 8 years old, and he was so scarred by the public school experience, like these subjects that he wasn't ready for. You know, he had some behavioral and emotional challenges to go along with maybe being on the autistic spectrum. And he was just so traumatized by that experience. It was really, really hard for us to explore anything that had to do with mathematics because of the experiences that he had had in just first and second grade. I mean, that's when school's supposed to be fun. Yeah, elementary school, like, that's how they get you.
Yeah, well, you know, I had maybe a similar experience with my youngest daughter with her math class this past year when she was in third grade. And they do math based on the Singapore method. Are you familiar with that, Brett?
No, I should be, but no.
Well, it seemed a little bit strange to me, where it's, you know, it wasn't how I was taught math, and it's still very simple concepts, but we kept getting hung up on, it's like, well, we know how to solve the problem. Now we have to figure out what they're asking for and fill in the other stuff. And, I tried to, you know, I didn't want to poo-poo it. I wanted to, you know, try to work with it, but I could see that Violet was struggling with this. So, and it's at some point they said, well, okay, well, you know, we have a math resource person, and, you know, so one day a week she's going to meet with this specialist, and, you know, it worked out fine. But what I really hated was that Violet came to her, she goes, oh, I'm not good at math, she said. Like, what are you talking about? So, that is like the worst possible outcome I could ever imagine, because she's great at math. And she, you know, one of the ways that we've learned is, she likes to invent her own games. So we made games that involve multiplication as part of the game, and, you know, and cards, and do a math problem, and then you advance and stuff. And she just loved that. That was perfectly fine. She has no problem with math. But I was not pleased with this situation where, you know, she was made to feel like, well, that's a subject I'm not good at, and she was only in third grade.
Yeah. Nick, do you remember the subject we talked about in our conversation that I said was like the great robbery of public school?
No.
History.
History. History. History. Now,
see, I listened to your podcast and I picked that up. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's such an important one, you know? Like, if you think about how many people are walking around kind of ignorant of the present because they don't have any understanding of the past, because they said, I'm not good at history, because they were bored to death in public school history classes. That's like, say, I'm not good at attending insurance seminars, you know?
Well, it's plus, like, the history that I was taught was a load of garbage, you know? Like, and I mean I'm 47, so the, you know, I didn't have the internet. I had an encyclopedia on a bookshelf and a history textbook and a government school teacher. That's all I had.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was never really turned off of history in school. I was actually one of the kids that thrived pretty well up until I started losing interest in high school. You know, I didn't love school, but I definitely loved history. Social studies has always been my favorite subject. And I think I was taught by some decent teachers through that. I still love history, and I'm glad that that's not been my case. But I do think it is a lot of the time with a lot of other students that I see, you know, in any subject, yeah. But definitely, especially history.
And I remember I only ever had one acceptable.
And we're going to have to come back at the market or after the market.
Take a little break.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
The Freedom Fiends in the final segment. I'm glad everybody has stuck with us through these technical difficulties. I cannot tell if everybody's here with us right now.
Wouldn't that be something if you were by yourself?
Oh,
we're all here.
I know. I was scared. I was so scared.
Can you guys hear me okay?
I can hear you, Jim and James.
Absolutely.
All right.
So it's nice. Time for redemption, and we need it.
Mm-hmm. Let's give us some good news.
I don't have anything exciting on my end.
Well, Nick, you certainly have something exciting on your end. This is the first school year where you're actually out on your own, doing exactly the very thing we promote. So that's very exciting.
That is true. That is actually extremely exciting. I can't tell you how happy I was that first week when school was out, and I'm still extremely happy that I'm not in school. You know, I talk to my friends still, and not all of them are having a whole lot of fun. And it's really kind of sad to see that. It's disappointing. And you know, I put my work out, and I try to be an example. And I know some people look up to that, but you know, I still haven't convinced anybody to really get out of school. But yeah, I guess it's nice. It is nice to be out.
Is there anything that you miss?
How about the yak meat sales? How's that going?
Yak meat sales are going good. That's been really great. We haven't sold. I haven't pushed it enough. If I were pushing it, I probably would have had half of it sold. But it's just something it's moved down in priorities list. We've had some other things come up with yaks and pigs that I'm working on right now. But the marketing, I need to work on a little bit more. And I do something I do miss. Brett was talking there. I miss social interaction a little bit. I love spending time alone. I'm introverted, but it's what I've realized when I go into social situations, I get tired out a lot faster than I used to.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I'm a bit of a hermit myself, and I went to Liberty Fest in New York City this past week. And man, was I exhausted when I got home, but I was so glad that I went. And it really made me want to be socializing more often. So got to find some ways to do that. Fortunately, I'm in a good place for social interactions.
You're in Manchester. Is that's correct, Brett?
I am in Manchester, and I think my next move might be to the New Hampshire seacoast, Portsmouth.
Ooh. The free coast.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a very good crowd out there. A lot of listeners, a lot of family people, entrepreneurs. And this is all for our radio audience. This is all part of the Free State Project. Lots of liberty-minded people have moved to New Hampshire in the last 5 to 10 years. So I'm right in the middle of that, almost dead center geographically. In the city of Manchester, New Hampshire. So, yeah, getting out and socializing is very important for sure.
Nice. Well, the coast of New Hampshire is my great 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 grandpappy helped settle that area back in the 1600s. So, out on Isles of Shoals was a settlement that he helped found, Captain Philip Babb back in the day. So.
Well, he did a heck of a job.
I think the Hazeltons went up in that area, too.
Well, they both did, because it's looking good here now. They really laid the groundwork.
Yeah. There's a funny story. Isles of Shoals, that was a part of Massachusetts at the time, or Massachusetts colony, sort of claimed dominion over their little colony out on the Isles of Shoals. And at one point, they came in and said, okay, you now have to pay us taxes. And the whole town just packed up and moved to another island. They're like, you know what? We're going to that island. Later, guys.
That's great. This was the Freedom Fiends. Thank you guys for coming on. We survived.
My pleasure. We did it.
We did it. Worms.
Likewise, we learned a lot about
stories. Despite our technical adventures, we're going to do this again with no tech problems.